Hi, I'm Barry Sonnenfeld, director of Men in Black.
And I'm Tommy Lee Jones, and I had a chance to work on it.
I think that's Annette Bening.
Could be, yeah.
So the first thing you're going to see coming up is this sequence that we did after we were done shooting the movie. It was always in the script, but everyone thought it was going to cost too much. But then once they saw the beginning of the movie, they liked it and the movie enough to let us go shoot this beginning.
You mean the bug?
Yeah, this whole bug, the whole flying bug. That was done about 6 months after we were done shooting.
It was so cool.
And this part of the whole bug part was done by a guy named Alan Monroe, who did visual effects on both Addams Family movies.
There he goes.
And this type, the long type here,
yeah,
that was designed by Pablo Ferro, who did Dr. Strangelove titles and a whole bunch of movies. And he did both Addams Family movies. I love this sort of long typeface. Hey, that Vincent guy is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that... how did you do that bug, Barry? Is that a computer bug, or...
Yeah.
Where did he come from?
The bug is...
It's a dragonfly, isn't it?
It's a dragonfly, and it exists entirely in the computer. It was scanned in from pictures and drawn, and then it was...
And what about this background? I mean, that's in one of the studios at Sony, right?
That's right. These are all these backgrounds.
Big crane shot or something?
It's all miniatures. The whole background is maybe the size of a 20-foot, 25-foot long run.
So it's a computer dragonfly and a miniature highway and desert. And they're going to computer moon. Because these questions that you're answering are the ones that I'm asked most often. And I've given up pretending to know what the hell I'm talking about.
You know, to this day, I watch commercials and ask my wife how they did it, and she always just says special effects to me. So even that truck, that one truck was a real full-size truck. Everything else are little miniature cars. And Graham Place was a line producer. We liked him very much.
Who's that guy?
Steven Spielberg. He's done several movies on his own. Not only is he a producer, he directs as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He was very pleased with this movie, Tommy.
Well, you know, I liked it too.
Walter and Laurie, who just came up as the producers, they're married and they're very, very beautiful.
Damn bugs.
Now, this whole scene is on the stage. Oh, God bless you.
I'm sorry.
Even though it looks like we're actually out in the Arizona desert, this was all done on a big stage here at Sony Pictures. And those are tiny little lights to make it seem like the cars are further away.
Yeah, and this was actually the first day of work.
Yep.
The first day of work.
Didn't you have a problem with one of these people that you felt?
Yeah, I remember complaining that one of the illegal aliens, didn't look authentic. It was the first bad idea that I had. I had many others as time went on.
But there were so many good ones, Tommy.
Yeah, there were some good ones. This is one of my favorite scenes. I just love the idea of an illegal alien disguised as an illegal alien.
Yeah. So again, this was all shot on stage here at Sony Pictures. Because there's so much night shooting, I felt that if we actually had to go to the desert and do it at night, we'd be there for weeks, and instead I think we did it in a couple of days.
Yeah, I was surprised that it took a couple of days. I mean, this was in, we did that. How many times did we shoot that drive up? I think it was 10 or 12.
Yeah.
And you took those skid marks out with the computer, didn't you?
Yep, because after the first take, there were these black skid marks that we couldn't deal with.
And, you know, it's so much better, I think, to be in the studio because it doesn't look real. It looks unreal in a very appealing way. You don't have the burden of a real desert there.
Yeah.
You have this sort of beautiful set.
And we were lucky enough. I think you wrote most of this scene, didn't you, Tommy?
Yeah, I did. I just like, the, you know, it's aliens disguised as aliens. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty cool.
We've got a winner here. All los demás pueden irse. Váyanse.
No se mueven.
Tomen el camión y váyanse, por favor.
Sir. Sir, you can't just... Don't.
I had no idea that you knew how to speak Spanish, and I was pleased and delighted that you did.
Yeah, you know, some people like that idea. Oh, look out.
This guy was great. He was a lot of fun to work with.
Well, the fact is, every day was a lot of fun. I mean, those saguaros, I mean, you couldn't really place them like that if you were...
Yeah.
And compose like that if you were in Arizona. By the way, it is Arizona supposed to be.
Early on, when we first came with, the alien that you're about to see, Mikey, with the big rubber body, we were going to see how it fit into the set and all that. And there was a drunk grip up in the perms, way up high, who kept yelling out, "Snorkel dork, snorkel dork." And we were so depressed because we didn't know if this movie was going to work at all. And there was this guy looking at this big rubber creature sort of making fun of it. Now, some of these shots are computer graphics. All of the work was done at ILM, supervised by Eric Brevig. And occasionally, like this shot, was a guy in a rubber suit. But,
I love the eye that looks back over the top of the head. That is so cool.
It's pretty much all rubber suit until he starts to run, because he actually was not capable of moving like that.
No.
On the set. And again, the background plates are shot in one pass, and then ILM adds the computer guy running, the computer Mikey running on a separate pass. And that's a 50-gallon drum of blue, weird, gooey stuff that we exploded in front of the lens. So that was real. And coming up was the very first time we ever tried to use our neuralizer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which added probably months to the shoot, don't you think?
Yeah, that was an unwieldy prop. Please give me your
attention for a moment. Great in concept. I love these guys, these hazmat guys.
Oh, yeah, with the little...
With the condom suits.
Condom suits and all their efficiency.
The device was unable to both open up and flash in the same take, which I thought wouldn't be a problem. And I said to the prop guy, Doug, who you and I personally gave a miserable time to...
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. We'll never need it to do both things in the same shot. And, of course,
we always did.
Who are you? Really?
Really? I am just a figment of your imagination.
Now, look carefully on his face. ILM added an effect so that instead of it just being a flash, you can actually see veins in his face. Mm-hmm. If you run it really slowly, you'll see red veins happening. And I love that he's got this goose sort of dangling.
Yeah. Oh, those little details add up.
So this was like the first week or so of shooting. Will was still finishing Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So you and I got to have like about 2 weeks of work before Will ever came on.
I'm sorry about back then. That happens. Been used to. Spirits willing came. The rest of me.
I think we were both worried that, about whether or not we'd have a career.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I was convinced we wouldn't.
That's pretty much what I thought. Never work again.
Yeah, no. Have you worked since?
They didn't know it was me.
Again, we're still on the stage. Again, we're still having problems with the flashy thing. Now we're in New York City. This
and
was shot. There's Will. And there's our stunt friend who plays an alien, as you'll see coming up. Keith Bang. Campbell. A shot like that, he's attached to a wire, and then Industrial Light and Magic takes the wire out of the shot. Same with that shot. There was a wire in that. This is a shot that Will wrote during lunch about it be raining Negroes. That was something he came up with during lunch that
black
night. Black people. That's right. This is all by the Guggenheim. We were going to go shoot this at Philharmonic Hall, and at the last minute they wanted too much money. Yeah. And we came up with the Guggenheim, which is even better because it looks like a flying saucer.
Yeah. I remember really worrying about whether you guys were going to put any bolts in the wall at the Guggenheim.
Right, right. And ruin the Frank Lloyd Wrightness of it.
The Frank Lloyd Wrightosity of it all.
Exactly.
The Frank Lloyd Righteousness.
That he does for real, Keith. He's quite a gymnast.
Yeah, the kid's a good athlete. What a beautiful building. I was afraid you guys were going to break a window or...
You know what? They were very... They made sure we didn't. Again, coming up, see, there's a wire that we then remove in post-production using computers. He's attached to a crane in that whole shot, climbing up the side of the building. There's nothing better than shooting nights in New York in the summer. It's relaxing, it's warm, it's humid.
And the folks are so friendly. And
I just love it. When Will did all this running, it was right after lunch, and he had had a huge hamburger, and I hadn't told him he'd be running all evening, so he was a little bit sort of sad. But I think he's running fine.
Yeah, he runs good. Runs real good. Oh, okay.
Coming up is an amazing shot. Keith will jump off the edge of the Guggenheim using a device called a decelerator, where you actually free fall, and at the last second, this wire that's attached to you.
Tell about the eyes.
Oh, the eyes. That was done in post-production, too.
With a computer?
With a computer that made that second set of eyeballs. And Keith had never jumped off a building backwards before, and he was telling me how nervous he was, and I said, well, I'd be nervous if I had to do what he's about to do. And he said, no, he was nervous about the acting. He wasn't worried about that fall, which, by the way, he did quite well.
He did very well.
Now, this shot's really complicated because the lights in the window are from one take. The camera was locked down. The lights in the window are from one take. You can see up at the top.
What's that moving light up there?
Yeah,
what is that? Is that an airplane?
That might be Edgar Bugs flying.
Oh, no, here it comes. So that's the computer doing that, isn't it?
Yep. And the cow was from a different take.
Yeah. Bang. There goes the
And truck. The wood was totally computer generated, the stuff that flew towards the lens.
Yeah.
And here's our introduction to Vincent D'Onofrio. He was in Full Metal Jacket.
What a fine actor. And,
yeah.
And these two people are very, very funny. They don't look funny, but you can't. But they make you laugh for a long time.
I remember being at the first read-through that we had together, all the actors sitting around a table, and you saying about Siobhan, who plays his wife, if all the actors can be as good as she is, we'll be just fine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she's brilliant and consistent. Whoop, there we go.
The hand is computer graphics, and that's a stunt guy on a wire being pulled in.
Did they tranquilize this dairy cow?
No. It was late at night, and, well, you know more about cows than I do.
Yeah, I'm wondering. But
you're not a dairy cow kind of guy, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm a range cow kind of guy, but I'm amazed that she just stands there.
No animals were at all bothered during the making of this movie. As
That is a funny woman.
Yeah. Now, Vincent, Edgar is no longer Edgar. Inside of Edgar is our alien creature.
Yeah. I love this set, by the way. I just love this set.
Bo Welch is the best production designer. He's just brilliant. And we built this actual set in Simi Valley on location. It's supposed to be upstate New York.
More.
And I did about 15 takes of Vincent drinking the sugar water, and it actually is sugar water. And by the end of the day, he was flying high on sugar.
Glucose or whatever it is.
Yep. Coming up is a shot that combines both a Rick Baker design mask and an ILM morph. So we shot Vincent one way, then Vincent holding onto a mask, as you're about to see, and the frames in between were done by Industrial Light and Magic. Siobhan, of course, has to faint for the comedy.
It's a really beautiful physical presence that Vince creates for. I mean, can you imagine sitting in the hotel at night trying to think of how you would walk if it was only your skin and there was this giant cockroach inside your body? It's kind of Kafkaesque is the easy thing to call it.
Yeah, you know, Vincent did a lot of work on trying to figure that out.
And he did.
He also watched Dr. Strangelove a lot, and you'll see one scene where he totally imitates Peter Sellers at the end of Strangelove, where he's trying to keep his hand down. This was a set we built in New York City, which was what we call the cover set. We only would go there when it was raining. And if you remember, Graham Place, in order to save money, picked a warehouse which had a tin roof, so you would actually be here while it was raining, hearing the rain.
Yeah, you get in and out of the rain and enjoy all of its audio presence.
Right. Here's our introduction to Linda Fiorentino.
Laurel Weaver, Deputy Medical Examiner. Find me at the morgue in 26. I'll show you.
Oh, wait a minute. Hey, wait a minute.
Excuse me. You're Dr. Weaver.
This always gets a nice laugh because
it's
so cruel.
It's cruel and it's kind of, you know, out of the way. You know, it's neat to see it through the glass.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed this scene.
This is a great scene to shoot. You cut out a lot of dialogue from this scene and made it shorter and funnier.
Who are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said the world was coming to an end.
Did he say when?
I never got my tie straight that day.
No, but you know what? That line's so funny that no one's noticing. Did he say when?
Yeah.
Come on, let's take a look.
It is funny. Then I remember not, believing that anything was funny, and that actually turned out to our advantage.
Yeah.
Thanks to you.
Well, my theory is the best way to have a comedy is when no one's trying to be funny.
Right, and it's, I've gotten to be an old man without quite learning that yet.
Hey, guess who we're about to meet?
Shalhoub.
Shalhoub.
The great Shalhoub.
Police is alien activity on the planet Earth.
Yeah, whatever.
This was down on Orchard Street about August. June. It was June. It was warm. It was relaxing. We were smoking cigars.
Yeah, and all these beautiful colors, these blues and reds. And the bicycle here in a minute.
I use the same bicycle, which you'll see in a few minutes, For Love or Money, a movie that went on to do $13 million. So I thought maybe we could achieve the same success with this one.
Yeah.
Rick Baker, again, who's the best, gave Tony different teeth, one eye that's totally wall-eyed, much bigger ears. And there are people that don't realize that that's Tony Shalhoub.
And there are people who think it is.
Yeah. That's the sad part. This is one of my favorite scenes in the movie. I think it's just really funny.
It is funny.
And it's so underplayed.
But you know what? Talk to me. He is just crazy when he's like this.
He's always crazy. Why you get a massage? Take a cruise.
That was a little digital effect with Industrial Light and Magic. And this next shot where Tony's head grows back, it took 7 months to do. We were working on the computer with it for 7 months. And we gave Tony helium to breathe in so that his voice went from really high to normal in a matter of seconds. That always works.
Yeah. I mean, by now this movie is just cool. You know, it's just cool. If you're 8 years old, it's cool. If you're 70 years old, it's still cool.
Yeah.
I don't care who directed it or who's in it. I'm loving this movie by now. I do care who directed it.
Oh, thanks. I care who was in it.
You know, I don't know.
God damn it, James! I don't know!
All right, that's confiscated, all of it. I want you in there.
We shot this. Was it in two nights, Tommy, or one?
This part was one.
One, right, yeah. Right.
We had places to go and things to do. And we didn't shoot too many takes, ever.
No.
Which I thought was pretty cool. And the really cool thing is how well prepared everybody was. Shalhoub was such a fine actor.
Yeah.
And was ready. There it is.
Yeah, that's, check out For Love or Money. I can make a few dollars on the video rentals at least. We did a very similar thing with bikes. By this point, I'm trying to say, for Will, who's really the audience's point of view, what's real, what isn't real? Did I just see that bike with lights? Didn't I? Now we're in another set at this really fine Chinese restaurant. By the way, do we know what the joke is, that whose punchline is he's eating my popcorn?
Yes, it's a dirty joke. Which
is
we
it?
Yeah, and we can't repeat it here. And it's not very funny.
You gotta go. Thanks for the egg rolls, kid.
Hey, wait a minute. Who are you?
So that really, that whole outside there, that's still on the stage with drizzling out the window, because we were only ever on these particular sets in New York when we had to go to cover because it was raining. Let's check this out. Coming up, this was again shot in Simi Valley, although it's supposed to be upstate New York. One of the things I love about this guy you're about to see is I love people that look like their profession. So I thought that this guy looked like an actual roach, even though he's a roach exterminator.
Taking care of your pest problem.
Pest problem?
He's an actor, but he did his own stunt at the end. He falls down on his face, as you'll see.
You know, I've noticed an infestation.
You can see that, you know, I love it. You can see that this guy is having a good time.
Uh-huh.
He's loving what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very engaging.
Yeah. Don't you want to get rid of him?
Oh, in the worst way.
So that rod is CG, and all that green stuff is computer graphics. And there, he's on a wire, and then we just remove the wire in post. And this is the size of his spaceship, which, of course, he can't get in. I love how frustrated Edgar is this entire movie.
Yeah.
Everything about New York is just
it
so...
It just doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It's very difficult to come 10 trillion miles and get anything done here on this stupid planet.
Yep. This is a set we built at Sony, and Bo Welch pretty much designed the set for this specific shot. You'll see that this is an elevator set. The camera continues to push in. We pretend the doors have closed and you hear a sound. And then this next set that you're going to see is really just behind those doors. And we're about to meet Rip Torn.
You're late. Sit down. My name is
he related to you, Tommy?
No, Rip is not related. He is related to Sissy Spacek.
That's right.
And he's from Taylor, Texas. And, he's an old liberal. He's an old radical. He's a very fine actor. He's a good friend.
He likes to fish.
He loves to fish. And he's played my father before. We did we did Cat on a Hot Tin Roof together
right.
One time. He played Big Daddy. You know, he actually understudied the part of Brick in the original Broadway production. and New Tennessee Williams. He's he is a man of the theater. I love these chairs, these little awkward egg chairs.
Yeah, the awkward egg chairs. What happened was when Bo Welsh showed me these chairs, which are sort of similar to the ones designed by Saarinen, who's a famous Finnish architect, Bo wanted circles everywhere to represent flying saucers, you know, like all the circles in the ceiling. And he showed me these egg chairs. And as soon as I saw the egg chairs, I decided to rewrite the scene to make the test about who would be smart enough to get a table. So when I saw the chairs, I said, you know what, Bo, give me a big, heavy table. And instead of the test being an actual test, the test is only which one of these guys is a different kind of thinker that would think, you know what, this isn't about a test, this is about I need a table to write on. Eric Brevig, who was a visual effects coordinator, shot a lot of the inserts and additional shots on that. I love what Will's doing with the pencil, putting it back together again.
Yeah, he's
physical comedy.
Right, on the page, this scene wasn't very interesting.
Yeah, yes.
And on the screen, it is.
It's one of those things also where the longer it goes on, the funnier it is, but you have to sort of figure out just, you know, how long is long enough. And here we had Skip Livesay, who did the sound effects, create a horrible screeching, scraping sound for this. See, you already know he's your guy.
Yeah.
Besides, he ran down a cephalopoid on foot.
Yeah.
This is a scene that I didn't think was going to work. And in fact, when I was having our first preview up in San Jose, I told all the Sony executives that I had left the scene in just so that they could see how it wouldn't play with an audience, but that I was going to cut it out of the movie, but I just wanted them to see. And of course, we have this scene, and it gets huge laughs. And
yeah, I remember you never liked this scene.
No.
May I ask why you felt little Tiffany?
Although Tiffany, the 8-year-old white girl, is pretty funny.
How'd you come to that conclusion?
Well, first I was going to pop this guy hanging from the streetlight, and then I realized, you know, he's just working out. And how would I feel if somebody come running?
It was an annoying set to shoot on. It took days. There was smoke. There were effects. There were strobe lights. I let a lot of it be done by second unit because I just felt it was going to be an annoying scene to shoot. Riff's pretty funny there.
This time of night with quantum physics books, she's about to start some shit, Zed. She's about 8 years old. Those books are way too advanced for her. If you ask me, I say she's up to something. And to be honest, I'd appreciate it if you eased up off my back about it.
And Will ad-libbed a bunch of this stuff.
Or do I owe her an apology? That was a good shot, though, right?
That's a monumental shot.
Yeah, I worked really hard on that.
But this kid ran down a cephalopoid on foot, boss. That's got to be tough enough.
Hey, look, there are like four of us. Well, two of you, me and Rip. I love this next scene coming up. That was actually probably, this next scene probably was a scene we did more takes of than any other scene in the movie, because I didn't think that I was going to cut away very much, and I remember that was the one time we were up in the late teens on this walk and talk.
Yeah, that was. Sure, I'm glad that I took the time to learn my lines.
Yeah, because it was
doing it 18 times.
Yeah, yeah. I love how these big lights.
The big circles go
overhead?
Yeah,
the flying saucers going overhead.
Yeah. I mean, graphically, it's really cool. You know, I never believed this part.
Of the whole movie?
This part here.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you. It's a little. But this next scene is pretty.
I believed every word of
the next scene.
Yeah.
creatures without a planet. Did you ever see the movie Casablanca?
What's interesting about the next scene, which is the scene where we get to meet what we call the worm guys, is was Rick Baker's idea to use actual puppeteers and actual puppets.
They were brilliant.
They were funny and brilliant and specific.
I remember I used to always want to be on Sesame Street and work with Kermit.
Right.
But I never dreamed I'd find something 10 times better in my life. Maybe I'll get a chance to work with Kermit someday.
Maybe Kermit and a worm guy.
Oh, man, would that be great? Maybe, yeah. No, I just love this.
And their rods are, like, sticking out of the backs into the wall, and the puppeteers were on the other side with monitors so they could see what you were doing.
But they're just ridiculously obscene little worm guys.
Yeah. Also, they're like the disgruntled workers. You know, they're always
smoking.
And
they smoke, and they drink coffee, and they...
They steal.
And they don't. They steal
supplies.
And they, you know, they don't. They loaf.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
They're loafers. I love the worm guys.
Yeah, they're some of my favorite people in the show. Now, this next scene was interesting because we were.
Oh, I always thought that was a beautiful shot, by the way.
Oh,
the
thank you. Yeah.
I love that. I love that.
Doesn't it look like Will could just lift up a foot and crush either one of us, Tommy?
Well, he's always been able to do that.
This day, we were in a very public place, which is Battery Park, and I don't know if you remember this, but for some reason, it was one extra that always managed to kick, like, a can or something.
I will never forget that. I mean, there was this one extra, and there was a can, and this guy would, every time he walked by this can, he would kick it. And I don't know... You know, it was like a psychotic can kicking extra. It made all this damn noise.
And it was a hard day. It was hot. We were trying to do it in one day.
The catch is you will sever every human contact.
The architecture is just beautiful. Anywhere. The round and the square.
Yeah.
And the right angles in the background. I'll
give you the sunrise to think it over.
Now, you remember when you first were sent Men in Black that it didn't take place in New York at all. It was in...
Elsewhere.
Nevada and Washington and Laurel, Kansas, underground with big bugs that ate grape jelly.
Yeah.
It was a very
I love that structure
script.
In the background.
Oh, the brick...
cannonade or whatever it is. It's an old fort to defend ourselves against aliens. In sailing ships. It's a beautiful structure.
Well, Will's thinking about becoming a Men in Black.
And there's Ellis Island, the Museum of Immigration there on the left.
You think he's going to join?
Yeah, he'll join.
You convinced him?
Yeah. Because he's strong. I love this shot.
This was shot, if you look carefully, 6 months later. It's winter, so you can see steam coming out of smokestacks. There's no longer leaves on certain trees, if you look really carefully, but it was a shot I really wanted to get. Now we're back on this great set. And I love this scene between you and Will. It's one of my favorite scenes.
You know, I never got that necktie right.
That's a little crooked again, isn't it?
Yeah, which is, you know, kind of neat. It's kind of, you know, it's fine. That 50s suit.
Yeah.
I think in the neckties never worked in the 1950s, did they?
No.
They were never right.
That was really a large part of what created the Cold War.
This is damn neckties.
Now, coming up, this is a real set that we built on a big stage at Sony, but on this shot here, there's a combination of both. Like, that guy is computer graphics, but some of these... And the worm guys are obviously computer graphics.
How is that obvious? It's not... I mean...
It's
real.
It's, well, you're right. And you see the little alien down there?
Yeah.
That's the guy who played Mini-Me in Austin Powers.
Yeah, it was that's a real little guy in a suit.
In a suit.
And people always want to ask me what that thing is. I just tell them it's a big puppet.
A puppet?
Yeah, what is that?
It's a big puppet. It has certain phallic overtones.
It does?
To me. But what doesn't to me? So here we are on this great set, and it's very sort of 50s Saarinen architecture, lots of curves and all that. This is...
The gadget room.
The gadget room. Going to replace... You're going to have to buy the White album again.
They are.
That ball, and every time you see the ball, is done with computer graphics. This was a scene that was never scripted, and we sort of did it on our own and then got Sony's permission to do it later. But it's a very complicated, annoying scene to do. Yeah, that's always funny.
Yeah,
guys.
I never thought this would work. I mean, I had no idea that this scene was going to be so funny and effective.
Yeah, neither did I, Tommy. That's what's really scary. I love Rip knowing that he should duck. And you know, we just sort of ad-libbed all this, you know, with Will sort of saying, watch out, sorry.
We thought it was funny as hell.
I love those gadgets, though.
Sorry, y'all.
Yeah, Doug Harlocker, who was our prop guy, did a great job, and we were tough on him.
You remember how many different times we named these twins?
Oh yeah,
we had so we had 15 different names for those things.
Do you see the guy who's standing upside down in the background behind your shot?
Yeah, he's cool. I mean, that guy had a hard day that day.
Yeah. He could actually walk even upside down. We had special cables attached.
Our teacher had to be from like Venus or something like that.
Ms. Edelson, Jupiter, actually. Well, one of the moons.
Yeah, you made up names for the aliens. There was Bob and Ray. There was a whole bunch of
Yin and Yang.
Yin and Yang.
Yeah. But your idea of a simple, one-syllable American name and then that...
The alien name,
and then
right.
The gobbledygook was the best.
There's Danny DeVito and Stallone down there.
You will dress only in attire specially sanctioned.
Now we're up here at in the locker room. I never thought this scene was going to work. How about that? Eat where we tell you. You're a brilliant fake typist.
Yeah, I mean, when you have trouble acting, you know, getting really proppy is always.
I see.
Always a help.
It's another beautifully designed.
If you can't act, what you do is you act like you're doing something.
Oh, I see.
It's a, you know, not many people know that.
Thank you. So
those watches were cool.
Yeah. So you believe that if you are concerned about a scene, give you a prop and that will help.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or anything to hide behind.
Okay. Let's see how he does on his tie. Maybe he had a better dresser.
He probably did. Yeah.
Mata was his dresser's name.
You know what the difference is?
There you go.
See?
Yeah.
Well, that's good timing,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. It helped. The whole acting worked. Now we're back in Manhattan on the around Prince Street and Broadway, around there somewhere, with a cat.
We had some narrative problems here with the cat. We're trying to figure out the plot deal. No, it was later with the little dog.
The dog saved everything. We changed the entire plot in post-production just by using the dog and subtitles. This is where I think Vincent is doing the Peter Sellers performance from Dr. Strangelove.
Well, inspiration. It's a reference. It's an homage, an homage, if you will. Mm-hmm. But this is really good Vincent D'Onofrio stuff, is what it is.
Yep.
B, we've got the deposed Sir Prefect.
For me personally, this is one of the funniest days of shooting in my life. Because we gave Rip really hard words to say, like rolling fish goat.
Yeah.
I remember he had a glass of ice.
Yeah.
Under his desk, which he used to help. He would chew on ice, and we just drove him. Not we, I did. I would just drive him crazy that day. I think it was one of his hardest days on the show.
Yeah, it was not an easy day.
It was funny.
For real. And it was funny, yeah.
This is a good one for him to warm up on. Go get him, Tiger.
Go get him, Tiger.
Again, all of these effects are done in post-production by ILM. We just had a blank screen there. Now we're outside near sort of the Wall Street Financial District in your Ford LTD.
Yeah, POS.
POS, Ford POS.
See, now we got to work on your people skills. You know, you get a much better reaction if you were a little more polite.
Fasten your seatbelt, please.
Whoa, that was good. Did you ever just say that?
Cars are like keyboards.
Oh, it's a prop for you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's something you can do.
And now we're going... this is a great restaurant in the meat district in Lower Manhattan. And the scene that's coming up, which is subtitled, allowed us to totally change the plot of the movie. In the original movie that we shot, these two guys, Carl Steichen and Mike Nussbaum, our two actors, were enemies. They represented two feuding galaxies. And in the final movie, they're on the same team. And it was totally rewritten in post-production since they're not speaking any known language and it exists with subtitles.
Yeah, and that was very cool, very useful. And it worked like a charm.
Carl played Lurch in both Addams Families. And Mike Nussbaum is a great actor who didn't know that I was going to ask him to do a face plop into a dish of pierogi with cockroaches on them until the day of shooting.
What are pierogi?
Pierogi is a Polish name for sort of a dumpling, okay, which can be fried or boiled. Those are the pierogi right there.
Yeah.
This actor, who's Russian, was upset that I didn't give him more lines of dialogue. And that's actually Rick Baker's face on as a mask that we put on a mannequin. There you go. There go those cockroaches. Okay, Mike, do a face plop.
No.
Not yet. This cat was well behaved.
I love that. Oh, yeah.
Yep, there goes the face plop. That tail is totally computer graphic.
I love that clock. Oh, do I ever love that clock.
That one there, on, yeah.
Yeah, in the background over the cat's shoulder right there.
Yep.
On the left. That was cool. There's so many subtle and really cool decisions made by these designers.
Yeah. Yeah, a little strange love moment there.
Yeah.
Bo works with someone named Cheryl, who's a set dresser, who's just fantastic. This is an actor named Patrick Breen, who's been in almost every movie I've directed. And he's, no matter what, you just put him in a movie and he's funny.
He's not only funny, but he's just real.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a big part of being funny, as you've always said. But this guy's real. Well,
look. This scene... She was great, too. This scene was kind of difficult to shoot because, as you'll see, you know, Will gets thrown around in the background. And for me, what I love about this scene is how we never cut into a close-up of Will. And the whole scene plays out in this one shot coming up without ever cutting. That was a shot that Steven Spielberg wanted me to do. We did this later. That's not even blue sky. That was on the stage. So you and Patrick are in the foreground, and Will was shot blue screen. He had three different harnesses and was being pulled in three or four different directions. And then ILM combined several different takes of that and then animated the tentacles.
Yeah.
And there's no cut. It all plays out. You're doing great, Ace.
Yeah. This the information that you're sharing with us now is those are the questions that I'm asked most often. I never know the answer. I love the little squid.
And that was totally created by Rick. It's radio controlled by Rick Baker. Congratulations, Reg. It's a squid.
Yeah.
And even the vomiting that's about to happen was done actually using Rick's device. There's no computer graphics in that at all. It's all real. And this is one of my favorite moments because for me this sums up the entire movie. When you say to him anything about that seem
unusual.
Yeah. Yeah, where do I start?
I would scare Regic so badly that he'd risk a warp jump with a newborn.
Let me check the hot sheets.
This was shot down on Wall Street.
These are the hot sheets. Best investigator reporting on the planet. Go ahead, read the New York Times.
Didn't you and I go back and forth on whether or not we thought the tabloids were controlled by the MIB or not? Didn't we had some philosophical discussions about that?
We did. And I don't remember what it was, but I know that I wound up agreeing with you.
I think I wound up agreeing with you, but decided it was too late and we would just do what I came up with.
But somebody had said that there might be some value to the movie if the tabloids were under the control of the Men in Black agency. In fact, that might be a factor in the original comic books.
Right.
And that's where it came from. Because in the comic books, the tabloids are under the control of the agency.
This is one of my favorite scenes. You know, I just love how flat you are, how insane Siobhan is,
yeah.
And how Will is basically the audience's point of view into the movie.
Will is so humane. But you know what, to me, what's really charming about this scene is that green grass and the blue sky and the black and white cows.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unworldly. You know, it's out of this world. And you can see it right there through the window. That's just insanely simple green hill. And that
hideous wallpaper.
And the beautiful blue sky.
You noticed earlier that Will started to drink the lemonade and spit it out, and we decided that was because there was no more sugar
in the house.
In the house, because Vincent Edgar Bug had drank it earlier in the movie.
Did he say anything?
Yes, he asked me for some water.
In fact, this was Will's first day of work.
Yeah.
You and I had been shooting for about 2 weeks, and we were trying to figure out the glasses.
Tap water.
All right, Beatrice. There was no alien. Flash of light you saw in the sky was not a UFO. Swamp gas from a weather balloon was trapped in a thermal pocket and refracted the light from Venus. Well, wait a minute.
We tried a whole bunch of different things with this scene. We were just ad-libbing different ways to go.
And that weak-ass story is the best you can come up with. All right. On a more personal note, Beatrice, Edgar ran off with an old girlfriend. You're going to go stay with your mom a couple of nights. You're going to get over it and decide you're better off.
Well, yeah, you know, because he never appreciated you anyway.
Finally, you get fed up. You don't want to be part of it.
What? You kicked him out. And now that he's gone, you're going to go in town. You go to Bloomingdale's. You find
That's
yourself
enough.
Nice dresses,
you've heard enough.
Sell some shoes. You know, find somewhere. Maybe you get a facial. And, hire a decorator to come in here quick. Cause
the other brilliant thing about leaving is in case Will was really screwing up with the comedy, you didn't have to be in the same frame with it.
No, yeah, I was gone.
Okay, look, check it out, man. When do I get my own flashy little memory messer-upper thing?
When you grow up.
Okay.
Please, not green.
Oh. That's my least favorite prop. To me,
mine,
it doesn't, it doesn't look real.
That's why we never saw it again.
Yeah, yeah. Too colorful.
Oh, wait, that was on Final Jeopardy last night. Damn, Alex said it was...
Dad, we have a bug.
That was another prop that occasionally wouldn't open.
What, we don't like bugs?
Yeah, that thing, it had a bad little latch.
The latch.
So, I mean, look at that grass. It's so weird.
The whole movie sort of has a surreal stylized feeling to it, even the reality of it.
Yeah, that's one of the strangest things about that exterior is that grass is really that green. And that's real grass, and it's real sky.
Mm-hmm.
And it It really looks painted.
Now we're on a set. We're not actually in a morgue. We're back at Sony Pictures on a set. And I think this is the day I first taught you how to defend yourself if you're attacked by lying on the floor and kicking your hands and going like this with kicking your feet and going
That. That was your hand-to-hand combat lessons that from Barry. And I, you know, there's things I didn't know about how to defend yourself when you're being bullied on the playground.
And I think that's also when you realize just how manly I was and what kind of director you were dealing with. Is that not right, Tommy?
That's when we began to understand that Sonnenfeld was a force to be reckoned
with. Yeah, exactly. Now we're back in the morgue, and that is not actually Mike Nussbaum. That's a head built by Rick Baker. And this is when she discovers there's something kind of weird going on with that body.
Do you think there are real aliens? What are your thoughts on the existence of aliens?
You know what? I'm scared about aliens, ghosts, spirits. I can't watch scary movies. I think that, I don't know if there are aliens or not, but I do believe that we don't have a clue what's really going on. And you, Tommy?
I agree with you as always. I don't have a clue.
The
universe is infinite, isn't it?
Is it?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've heard. I mean, I don't know if it's infinite or not. I never can get my my mind around that idea. Is it infinite or is it not? I mean, sometimes you read in the New York Times that they have a way of figuring out how big the universe is, or how old it is, and I can't really square that with the concept of infinity.
You know,
if it has a size, it's finite, isn't it?
Yeah.
If it has a definable size, if it has an origin, it has a beginning, and that again just puts it outside the realm of or infinity or inside the realm.
I like your theory, which you state in the movie, which is that 500 years ago everyone thought the earth was flat. You know, that basically whatever we believe in now will be proven
wrong later.
So I'm kind of relaxed about it.
I am too, but the question is, and because it's relevant to this idea about the existence of aliens, if the universe is infinite, then of course there are aliens.
Yeah. And I bet they look exactly like our aliens, and that we just sort of...
Got it right. Yeah. But maybe the universe is not infinite.
Then we'd be totally wrong.
Okay, now we've got that squared away. I'm glad we know these things.
Yeah. Now, I think what's exciting is we're about to see a really cool alien.
Oh, I love this guy.
We called him Chucky.
I thought he was, you know what I thought at first? I thought this is just impossibly cute.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
stupidly cute. And then I actually grew to like this little guy.
You know what I think also helped a tremendous amount is Danny Elfman's music in that whole section.
Yeah.
Had an emotional resonance to it that so that it didn't feel cute. It felt weighty and important.
Yeah.
Will's very funny in this scene.
He's very funny.
As is Linda by being such a straight person.
Yeah. Hey, Will's always funny.
Yeah.
You know? Will is so funny that if you stand next to him and don't do anything, they're going to think you're funny,
too. You're funny, too.
Yeah.
You know, that's my theory about comedy. You only want one funny guy, and then both guys are funny.
That's right.
You never want two comedians in a movie.
No, all you got to do is stand next to Will and not do nothing, see?
Mm-hmm.
And people think you're funny.
Now you're funny.
Right. That was a big plus for me in my life.
A little deader.
What do you think killed him?
Bob?
Dr. White.
You're up, Slater.
Okay, now we're about to meet Chucky. Now, this is a really, for me, fascinating combination because in some shots, it's an actual mechanical head with a tiny little Chucky in it.
Here we go. I love that.
Like in that shot,
the steam.
That all is really happening there. But whenever we cut to a tighter shot of Chucky talking, it's actually an 11-foot animatronic Chucky that we then photographed on a blue screen stage like that, and your mind perceives it to be small and that it's a close-up, but that's an actual 11-foot mechanical device, like the size of something you'd see at Disneyland. And even some of the wider shots, we took the 11-foot head like that and shrunk it down.
Yeah, those are astonishing shots, and the opened face and the and this. I don't know if we'll see it again with that.
With all the video screens, because he's been using this guy, the Mike Nussbaum guy, to sort of like be his eyes.
His pickup truck.
His pickup truck, exactly.
That he drives around.
See that shot? That's an 11-foot tall device that's been matted into another shot.
To prevent war, the galaxy is on Orion's belt.
And we're coming up to one of my favorite moments with you and Will. Again, talking about, you know, comedy by doing nothing is, you know, when Will's saying, aren't you afraid you're going to give her some long-term damage? And you say, little.
Yeah.
Darkillians are not going to like this. This guy was one of the royal family.
I knew it.
So again, that whole mechanical scene is a combination of large Chuckies, small Chuckies, great music from Danny Elfman.
In New York, the other day, I was in his cab.
Also, great puppeteering.
Yeah.
Look, that's what the little dude inside the big dude's head said, right? Right after... Damn, man. You did the flashy thing already.
Hey, whoever you guys are, you're going to...
Watch. You'll notice in this next shot, Will doesn't quite get his glasses up. Hurry, Will. Did he get them up before you flashed or not? I'll never know.
No, he was behind the neuralizer.
Yeah,
and the neuralizer directional, so it's okay.
Oh, I see.
It works fine.
Okay. I was nervous about it.
Yeah, I was too, but it works fine.
Okay.
He's behind, see? It goes in... It's directional, the neuralizer.
Have you ever flashy thing made?
No.
Now we're back outside New York with our hazmat truck, which... See, part of the reason I wanted to set the movie in New York is I felt that if there were aliens, they would blend in and be most comfortable living in New York.
Of course.
And B, you could do things like that, and no one in New York would even give a second thought to it.
Yeah.
Make it a happy memory.
Yeah.
That's a little ad-lib you guys came up with.
Yeah.
A happy memory thing.
A happy memory.
What attracted you to doing this in the first place? Was it the topic or doing a comedy or?
I thought it was the idea was just wonderful and attractive and original. It was original,
mm-hmm.
I thought. And it was at the time. There have been a lot of alien movies since this one.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing that attracted me was the idea of a police force and, you know, in charge of visitors from outer space.
Right. For me, this is one of the two scenes coming up that totally ground and center the movie. I think part of the reason that it became a successful movie is that there actually is an emotional component to the movie. And right here in this scene is where that starts. And basically what I love about watching this scene is watching Tommy Lee Jones act to a blank computer screen.
It's an emotional scene, isn't it?
It's very emotional, and it suddenly makes a movie about something.
Yeah, it does. I think it does support the humor. It does support the comedy to have in the back of our minds that it's really lonely policing the universe.
Yeah,
it's a tough job.
One of the things I really like about the movie is that not only are you guys heroes, not only do you save the world, but you're in a job where not only do you save the world, but no one can ever thank you for it because you can't exist. So it's truly for me, the Men in Black are the most heroic because they know they'll never be thanked.
Right, and that's a very strange and attractive thing about the comic books that survived into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sort of cool and fascinating.
There you are acting to a blank screen, but making us believe that you miss this woman, even though there was absolutely nothing there when we shot it. Subject lost. How poetic.
Okay. Yeah. Subject lost.
Come into focus a little bit here. So you were the guy in that picture you showed me with the flowers. And I take it she never got those flowers.
I remember before we worked together talking to Steve St. John, who's a camera operator who I think has worked with you.
Eight times.
And
yeah.
I said, what's Tommy like? And one of the things he said is, there's no greater actor that can act to props than Tommy Lee Jones.
I've been telling you, you know, these props, you know, when in trouble, pick up a prop.
Mm-hmm. Again, you guys are acting to a big blank screen there. And these two guys are totally controlled by puppeteers that were in the basement. And if you ever went down below and looked below the stage, there was a ghetto of puppeteers. It was all mm-hmm. the sort of like rich guys working on top, and they had bunks and sleeping bags and
lunch pails.
It was a very sort of multi-class set. And again, you're not looking at anything here except blue screen. Give the kid a weapon.
Yeah.
Give the kid a weapon.
This is another moment that I love, and this scene was basically directed by Tommy. It was Tommy's idea to have Will point the noisy cricket at him. Right here, coming up, right there. Tommy said, why don't you have Will point the gun at me? So this is, I think, where Tommy realized that he was a comedy director.
That's right. That was the beginning of my comedy directing career, that day.
And by the way, I'd love for you to direct a sequel if something happens to me.
I will. I'll be right there for you.
Okay, that would be great. I'd really appreciate it. I love this guy, this actor, because he, look at his greasy, he looks just like what a New York sanitation guy would look like. A greasy, long...
Armed. Guy, yeah.
Not sanitation, a tow truck guy. This was a hard day to shoot. Explosions, and I just love his hair. That's his real hair. That's not a wig.
You know, there was something about New York that was really beautiful during that time.
Yeah, it was a great time of year. I love shooting in New York. The crews are the best. The grips and electrics are smart. And
it seems to me that New York gets happier as time goes by.
Yeah.
Maybe it's me. Maybe New York is always its own self in many, you know?
We grow into it.
Over a lifetime.
It was such a pleasure shooting here. That's Will on a wire that we pulled him back.
That's the in the echo suit.
Again, here comes another wire. No, actually, on that one, Will just sort of ran backwards and jumped into the cans. This scene actually was entirely Will's idea. Will wanted a scene, an action scene, where he got to run down the street. So this is what we came up with. I love this scene here because it talks about the philosophy about Men in Black, that there's always a virus or...
Yeah. There's always something threatening life on Earth.
And here comes my favorite insert of those guys. Well, are they aliens or are they bystanders? I have a photo of those four people up on my wall at home.
Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen.
Zed, we need a containment crew on McDougal Street south of Houseman. Containment may be a moot point, old friend. The exodus continues.
And we're about to come up to the scene that many people thought you actually had harmed. Oh, by the way, first of all, these guys, in this particular case, these are not puppets. These are CG, computer graphic worm guys. I love that they're stealing the Marlboro cigarettes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when you get on the duty-free cigarettes.
Right, they're on their way back to their galaxy, wherever it might be.
They're fleeing. I had to appear on the Today Show to defend the fact that they were smoking cigarettes.
Why? They thought that it might...
It might
cause other aliens to smoke?
Other aliens to smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
The scene where you have the discussion with Frank the Pug, I just want everyone to know that every time we are in a close-up of Tommy shaking the off-camera pug, he was actually shaking a stuffed Balto dog, which was a movie that Steven Spielberg had produced.
Right, so no animals were harmed in the shooting of the upcoming scene.
In fact, the pug enjoyed getting held by Tommy, as you'll see.
And there were several of them.
Yes, there were two.
They didn't have to do multiple takes.
No.
And they loved it.
They rehearsed for about 6 months. I love that the pug has a I Heart New York t-shirt.
Yeah. The fact that those pugs have never, you know, had it so good.
No. They're sad that...
Yeah, life has been a letdown since Men in Black for them.
Now you're about to see my neighbor, Stanley Arkin, cross the frame. There.
Is that Stanley?
That's Stanley Arkin.
Bugs, Frank, what do you know?
I know nothing.
Not a thing.
Got it, okay. Rosenberg wasn't some two-bit...
And the mouth movement is done by Industrial Light and Magic. But again, I just love that, you know, for Tommy's character, for Kay... This is not out of the ordinary.
No.
That's what makes it funny, right?
It's commonplace police brutality.
Exactly. It's like there, he's shaking Balto, the stuffed dog.
The galaxy is here!
What do you mean here?
Galaxies, hundreds of millions of stars and planets. How's it here?
You humans, when are you going to learn that size doesn't matter? Just because something's important doesn't mean it's not...
It's just fascinating, Barry. It's just very appealing. The situation here.
Sure.
You wouldn't want to, if you knew, you wouldn't want to miss that. If you had a chance to go to the movies, you'd certainly want to take it.
And again, because we could put any words into his mouth that we wanted to, we totally changed the plot of the movie.
Yeah, by putting the cat up there.
Yeah.
And,
Kay.
Because we really didn't know how to go on from that night.
No.
We didn't know. So the cat really came in handy. We didn't know how we were going to get to the next sequence.
Hey, wait. Does that say Orion on that cat's collar? I think it does. All of the universe in that ball, again, is done in post-production by Industrial Light and Magic, as was the light reflecting in Linda's eyes, which was done in post. As was that. We didn't actually go shoot that. Just so you should know.
Yeah, I wasn't working that day.
Coming up is one of my favorite scenes. I love this scene. In fact, I wanted to play this guy that you're about to see, who's played by a great comedic actor named David Cross, but I thought that his sensibility and my sensibility in this scene are about the same. I just love how flat he is here.
Thank you for making sure the bell works.
Another typical New York kind of guy.
Yeah.
What's up, Farmer John?
The other thing you can see is that Vincent, who's really Edgar Bug, the skin of this dead guy is starting to flake and die, and he's getting more and more. You can see there's a tooth right there that's sort of sticking out. It's falling apart.
His Edgar suit is deteriorating.
Yep.
Yeah.
He Vincent told me he was doing John Huston in this scene.
Vincent is a brilliant actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Do what?
Don't do it.
When we did the first take of that, the assistant cameraman jumped about 20 feet away from the camera. Watch out now.
Okay, let me...
Tommy's quite the stunt driver.
Come on, man. All we gotta do is go in here and get a cat. It's not really that hard. But if you go in there, you're gonna lay your Jack Webb on her.
This moment's a little dubious here. We got away with murder about here.
Yeah.
Him convincing you to leave him alone for 5 minutes.
Well, it's like you said. You know, if we believe, the audience believes. But it's hard to figure out why. Oh, yeah, he was afraid that I would neuralize
her again.
And hurt her brain.
Wipe out half of her med school classes.
Yeah.
Again, we're back on the set at Sony here.
Hello? How you doing?
Hello.
I'm Sergeant Friday from the 26th Precinct. Cat came in with a corpse the other day.
We did a lot of takes of this because we had Will constantly improvising and coming up with even more outrageous and funny things to say. But we decided to go pretty straight with it.
The checked or plaid look of the walls is very appealing.
Another brilliant Beau Welch decision.
It's just fascinating what Beau did.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't. I mean, it's very hard to take your eyes off of this movie because things. It's so many things to see.
Yeah.
And you get to laugh while you're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One thing. I gotta drive. You know, it's not some macho trip. I'm saying that's just.
I love that moment where even though he's a bug, he's already sort of thinking, oh, enough of this bad performance here from Jay.
Gross.
Yeah, they love those gross moments. Now it's dawning on Jay, Will, what's going on, but it's a little bit late. I love the writing in this scene.
I never thought this scene would work.
You know what? On the day of shooting, neither did I.
Hey, shut up!
Let her go, shit-eater.
Oh, listen, monkey boy. Compared to you humans, I'm on the top rung of the evolutionary ladder. So can it.
Because there are too many things having to happen at the same time, and why aren't you shooting, and how does he get away, and...
All those things that we worried about, it turns out nobody cares.
And then things that you don't worry about,
everybody cares.
Everyone cares about.
Yeah.
How is it okay?
I'm saying it's going to be okay.
But we don't want to admit that.
Oh, no, you're right. That was a big wire removal there. As is that.
Let me go!
Here's a weird thing. I thought only people in New York would get the joke of Edgar throwing this guy's beaded seat out.
Yeah.
And I did it not for a joke. I did it because I needed Will to see something that made him a clue. And it turns out that not only was it a clue, but it was ended up being really funny. And even in other states, people laugh at the beaded taxi thing. That made me gag just watching that on the day we were shooting.
You did a cat!
See?
Yeah.
The clue. Will hurt his ankle on that shot. This is one of Will's favorite moments, which is that Will is all energy.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know, you're just sort of relaxed about it. He laughs every time he sees that shot.
He's hiding the noisy cricket behind his back.
Yeah, 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 that's smart.
He's so cool.
Now we're coming up to the next scene that we totally rewrote to change the plot of the movie. The plot used to have three warring nations, and we changed it to have two warring alien nations. This was totally ad-lib by you coming in about the bionet.
Yeah.
What do we hear from our friends upstairs?
Again, there you guys are acting to blue screen.
Warning, photonic fusion detection. Warning.
Hey, look, it looked like you were looking at us for a second.
I thought all those people that worked in the Men in Black headquarters, all those sort of extras in the background, I thought those people were all really cool.
They were really cool.
They worked hard, and they got it. They were they just did a wonderful job.
You know who we haven't talked about is Don Peterman, the cinematographer who shot this movie. I thought he did a great job at making it look so specific and sharp and clear.
You can always see, and there's always something to see, and mm-hmm. the lens moves. It never leaves. It always starts in a beautiful composition, moves through a beautiful composition, and winds up on a beautiful composition. And Peterman is easy to forget about because he never speaks.
Yeah,
but he sees beautifully.
But you can always tell what time it is during the day by how low his pants are getting.
Yeah.
old guys is one of my favorite moments.
Do those still work?
And now we dissolve from here to
the real thing.
Matte painting that's supposed to be the real thing.
Oh, this supposedly.
It's a little fakey. Now we're actually about to come on to one of my all-time favorite scenes in any movie, which is the scene of you and Will driving upside down in the tunnel. That's another scene that didn't deserve to work when we were shooting it, don't you think?
Oh, yes. There are many scenes that didn't deserve to work. And Peterman, speaking of mm-hmm. our cinematographer, is no small reason for our getting away with the things that we did. We had tremendous boost from Elvis Presley.
Yep.
Here.
And you sing it to Elvis.
And Chuck Berry, who wrote that beautifully poetic song.
So this is all done with ILM, who did a great job in this scene. The tunnel and all the cars in the tunnel are miniatures, although the miniature was probably about 80 or 100 feet long. You and Will are actually upside down in just a little bubble capsule.
Yeah.
I remember the unfortunate time when you guys were locked upside down in the capsule when Will farted.
Yeah, I do. I've been trying to forget, but I do remember.
You were very kind to him. Although Will was screaming, "Let him out! Let Tommy out!" We flipped you over quickly, but you were very relaxed about it. Outwardly. So there you are singing upside down.
Yeah.
And this is a scene that was... You're right. It's the acting. It's Chuck Berry and Elvis Presley, and it's also just a brilliant job by Eric Brevig and all of his friends at ILM. I love
and
that.
It's your refusal to, you know, to be bored. Your flat refusal to be bored for 1 minute.
This was shot on the biggest stage at Sony. It's where they shot the yellow brick road for the
really?
Wizard of Oz.
Really? I didn't know that I worked in that same studio.
Yep.
God, I've been around a block a time or two.
Oh, sure. Isn't Weren't it? You the mayor of Lollipop Land in the original? No, that wasn't you.
No, that wasn't me.
No. So that's a combination of a real set and a painting. There you go. We had a better line that we took out. I liked it before when Will said, "Do you know how to use those things?" And you said, "No idea whatsoever."
Yeah.
And we chickened out and went with different... Not we. I chickened out and went with something else.
Warning. A. Minutes to the destruction of Earth. A. Minutes to destruction.
People, the one question people always ask me is, what is the most difficult scene? And I never know the answer to that, because either they're all easy, or none of them are. Or none of them are. But ranks of difficulty is a very hard question to answer.
You don't mind acting to blue screen that much, do you?
Oh, no. I mean, I just like having a job there.
Okay.
Blue screen, green screen. Any.
How about the last scene in the movie? Well, we'll get to that. But I was wondering, the emotional scene. Here we are. We're on stage in New York with some sad greenery in the background for these two shots.
But it's kind of a motif by now. You know, we were talking about the impossibly green hills at
right.
the farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes the studio stuff work. And it was established at the very beginning with those impossibly well-composed saguaro cactus, you know, in the opening sequence. So as far as our audience and as far as we know by now, the entire universe is one big set.
Here you are on blue screen, and I love the difference in reaction between his being frightened and you having done this 11 times before.
Yeah.
And he's saying, like, should we run? Are we going to run? What's going on? And even in these next shots, you can see the difference between Will totally frightened and Tommy sort of being the old hand at this. This, again, was all shot at Sony on a big stage for weeks. And in order to keep the grass living, remember it was like 40 degrees and very humid?
Ugh.
It was just cold and dank and uncomfortable. And now we're really coming up to a lot of shots where Will and Tommy are acting to nothing. To we called it Sea Biscuit, a little sort of head on a stick to show you where to look.
Busted ass vehicle and put your hands on your head.
Vincent is now, totally falling apart. His skin is totally flaking.
His character is really disgusted with these human beings.
Yeah, he's fed up. Nothing's worked well. Now this is all computer graphics on Edgar Bug from now on. Rick Baker had designed a brilliant 11-foot-tall Edgar Bug, which was designed to talk but not be able to walk, and at the last minute we rewrote the script because we had no ending. Remember, it was a debate between Will and the bug about the nature of the universe. And I convinced Sony that we needed some action in our action-adventure comedy. So at the last minute, we had to throw out Rick's bug, which worked great, but wasn't designed to move. Here's a shot where you're acting to nothing.
Yeah, I'm acting to a crane.
Eat me! Eat me!
And then the last shot, Tommy, that you did on the movie
is this one.
Is those shots?
That was the most shot was the most difficult for me in the entire
really
movie. It was you had to remember you put me in this big trough full of MSG gelatin,
right?
And
you had to act.
Yeah.
Now. Here's Will acting to a non-existing computer graphics bug. And this shot here where Will gets punched, that was online at ILM for about 8 months until we could figure out a way to make it funny. And this is all Eric Brevig and his guys at ILM. But the last shot we did of Tommy was in New York City in this big vat of sort of mucus.
Yeah. Oh, it's terrible.
And we came up with this whole ending a week before we shot it. We had been, we had a year in pre-production, 5 months of shooting, and we still didn't have an ending. And the last weekend before we shot this, we wrote this ending where, you know, Will figures out to start killing Edgar Boggs' relatives. And a lot of this stuff that Will's talking about here was stuff that Will sort of wrote on the day. We had to count every cockroach between setups to make sure that none had escaped for the Humane Society.
They didn't want you killing any cockroaches?
That's correct. We weren't allowed to. And in fact, anytime you see anything being crushed, it's like...
A rubber cockroach?
It's a packet of mustard under a shoe.
Yeah.
But we'd have to
count... How are those cockroaches doing?
Oh, they're fine. A lot of them have...
gone on?
Just based on the residuals of this movie, they're moved on.
They're very comfortable, I imagine.
And again, this whole time, Will is acting to sort of a head on a stick walking towards him.
Snatching up galaxies and everything. My attitude is, don't stop nothing.
That was another very hard shot, yeah.
It was surprisingly difficult to light that studio.
Yeah.
Very hard. I think it had something to do with the scale of things, didn't it?
It was so big, and the green would absorb all the light, and the black velour all around the stages. That was an insert we shot about 6 months later. Remember how much Will hated having this stuff on him?
Yeah.
You kind of enjoyed it, I think.
Yeah.
At least you didn't whine about it the way Will did.
No, I started, you know, it's like a keyboard or a car or, you know, any other prop. It's some thing to do.
Right.
And, I enjoyed it. I love the ray gun.
Yeah.
And all the goo. And I just, you know, dug it.
Watch out. I think half of Edgar Bug's still alive back there.
Oh, no.
I was the fire.
Not bad for your second day at work, is it?
It's definitely rates about a 9.0 on my weird shit-o-meter.
Should have been here for the Zeronian migration in 1968.
We had so many attempts at the ending. At one point, Linda became a man in black, and you were neuralized. At one point... she got neuralized, and you didn't get neuralized. Remember, there were about 5 or 6 endings over the course of...
Yeah. Yeah.
But we seem to make only the right decisions, Tommy. Now, I love this scene. Again, for me, this scene emotionally grounds the entire movie. I remember shooting it over 2 nights. It was windy.
Mm-hmm.
You can see all the wind on the shadows, and it was annoying, and the generators were making noise, but it was so genuinely emotional.
They're beautiful, aren't they? Stars. I mean, I never look at them anymore, but they actually are quite beautiful.
Kay, you're frightening your partner.
I haven't been training a partner, I've been training a replacement.
Right there.
Wait a minute, Kay. I cannot do this job by myself.
Hey, guys. My apartment isn't anywhere near here. It's not even on the same island.
Days, months, years. Always face it forward.
I don't think that's your hands or Will's hands. Have we just ruined the movie for everybody?
No.
Okay.
No. We tried to shoot that insert.
Yep.
But you were very picky about the timing of it.
Okay, cut it out. Again, Elfman did a great job on the music, and it just adds to the emotional... level the whole thing.
No, you won't.
Now coming up is one of the most expensive shots ever done in the history of motion pictures, which is the last shot of the movie that starts on Will and Linda driving away and pulls back into another universe.
Which I think is the coolest part of the movie.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. I love the epilogue. Mm-hmm. I think it's just very artful. I really dig it.
For me, it sort of sums up the sort of philosophy of the whole movie, which is that we don't really know what's going on, and we think we do, and we think we're so smart. It's what Tommy tries to teach Will in the movie, which is, you know, Will always has answers, you know, but Tommy's been around, and he knows there are no answers. And this last shot after the Dennis Rodman joke was almost $1 million. It starts here, and it's a series of zoom outs. The helicopter kept going higher and higher, and then the shots were perfectly combined, and now we're into total computer graphics. And again, this was a shot that I had always wanted to do, but was not scripted. And when Sony and John Calley saw the movie in almost finished form, they agreed to give me the money to do this shot, because I think it just feels like a really smart ending.
It's very smart. And I remember hearing you talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, oh, well, that's just another Barry idea.
Thank you.
And when I saw it, it was precisely as you described it, and turns out to be my favorite thing in the whole movie. It's a very bright idea.
Well, we had a great time. Let's see who we can talk about here.
Okay.
Oh, look,
yes.
There's Vern. See, Elian's son?
Yeah.
He was the guy who was Mini-Me in Austin Powers 2. Brian Smurz was the stunt coordinator.
Puppeteers, Ed Alonzo, everybody. Look at all those puppeteers.
Yep.
Those guys did a great job. And they were their own society.
Stephen Mullen dealt with all that whining from me over the years.
That was his job.
Yeah.
Listening to you whine.
And Graham, who's still to this day my best friend.
Yeah.
Gabriella just had a kid, I think. If she didn't, I apologize. Jackie and Rob, they were very important doing all the industrial light.
Oh,
yeah,
these set decorators. Steve St. John. Never sufficiently appreciated Steve St. John.
Yep.
The Steadicam genius.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest feet in the world. His feet are 3 feet long.
And don't forget Zorn, his assistant.
Zorn, the wonderful, the wordless,
yep,
all-seeing, never out of focus, Zorn.
We passed Catherine James, who did your makeup for ever.
Yeah.
Peter Curlin, the sound mixer, who's done every single Coen Brothers movie. And is a really good crossword puzzle guy.
Let's apologize again for all the people who they were not mentioning, whose names we aren't speaking out loud as the thing rolls by.
Skip Lisay, who designed all the sound, and Lee, who mixed it. I also want to talk about Jim Miller, who was the editor of the movie, who's edited every movie I've directed so far, who spent almost 2 years on it.
Oh, I love that. Bug Wrangler.
Yep.
Mark Jackson.
Yep.
Bug Wrangler. What a job.
Two assistants to Mr. Sonnenfeld.
Yeah.
One assistant for Mr. Jones.
What do all these assistants
Jones.
Do?
Coffee.
Okay.
Bob Putentowski, who's a color timer, who's since retired, is excellent.
And what is this? Tell what a second unit is, Barry.
A second unit
are
those guys that are shooting shots like cars driving up and inserts of bugs and cockroaches.
That you don't have time for.
That I don't have time for. Neri Kyle Tannenbaum is great because you get to say Tannenbaum, oh Tannenbaum, whenever you see her. So that's kind of...
And she never gets tired of it, huh?
No, God, no. Not when I do it. Dennis Gamiello is a key grip who's done most movies with me. When I used to be a cameraman, and Rusty Angles, who was a gaffer for me for many years.
And this is all second unit here. All of these guys, right?
Yeah, now we're into... Yeah, now we're into Rick's guys.
It took a lot of people to make this movie.
How good is Rick Baker?
Oh, Rick Baker, you know, the greatest thing about him is he's really funny.
Yeah.
He's really, really funny. If you don't watch him, he'll sneak over behind the camera and he'll paint a bruise on himself mm-hmm. somewhere, and which looks like he's just been brutalized.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll step up beside you, slap himself, and then and then look to some really important producer and say, "Look at what this actor did to me."
And that's a funny thing.
You have to watch out for him. He's dangerous that way. Rick Baker's a great guy.
Do you know that if it wasn't for these 8 minutes of end titles, I think the movie would have been too short to show on television? It's a very short movie.
So that's why the titles roll so slowly.
Yeah, so slowly. I think there's 8 minutes of titles. We're still in the world of Industrial Light and Magic here.
Yeah.
Who did a fantastic job.
Wait a minute. Does that say Headquarters Surveillance Egg Unit?
Yes.
What is that?
Remember the big egg screen at Men in Black headquarters? All the visuals that went on there was a separate unit.
Oh, okay.
Done mainly on Macintosh computers as opposed to the big micro.
And
Sun
we have
micro
a miniature
system.
Tunnel unit?
Yeah. Each one of those cars in the miniature tunnel is about that big. And I think there were 80 of them at a cost of several hundred thousand dollars.
Whoa.
Now, remember we talked about the bug at the beginning of the movie? The opening title credits. That's an entire different studio as well. Pablo Ferro, who did both Addams Families and Dr. Strangelove. Hey, we're getting near the end.
Yeah, we know who those guys are.
But then there's the soundtrack stuff.
Uh-oh. Soundtrack from Columbia.
Didn't Will Smith write a song called Men in Black for this movie?
Yeah, and it went on MTV, and it was a big hit.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Promised Land.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the only two songs in the movie.
Animal Actors of Hollywood.
They supplied Frank the Pug.
And the cockroaches, too?
No, they were not the supplier of the cockroaches.
They were Insects of Hollywood.
Right? Insects of Hollywood. Yeah. And there are so many of those. Hey, Susan Ringo's my wife. We call her Sweetie.
Yeah.
Well, Tommy, thank you for stopping by today and watching the movie with me.
Oh, I've certainly enjoyed it. I like this movie,
Imagine if we could have heard what we were saying.
Right. Yeah. I really do like this movie.
Me too.